You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. We're recapping Thursday night's exciting Seahawks victory over the Arizona Cardinals on Thursday Night Football. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I am Tristan Caracino. We're recording here live from Renton, Washington, home of the Seattle Seahawks.
And home of the Fabulous Pelton Cast for now.
The Fabulous Pelton Cast for now. You're whispering because there's a baby sleeping in the other room.
I am. That's true.
It's true. I think you could talk at a normal level.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's try. You're still doing it. I'm kind of doing it now because you are also.
Yeah. I. It's going to be tough to get out of that habit.
Okay. Well, let's get into it. Let's talk about the game. Before the game, I got here and I pointed out that there are a few key areas that we wanted to look at throughout the game. And I think let's dive into those first and then see where that takes us for the rest of it. But the first thing that I wanted to pay attention to was if the Seahawks would choose to have Richard Sherman following Larry Fitzgerald around or whether they'd match up by sides like they have most of the weeks. What'd you think about that for the game?
Well, clearly they continued to match up by sides. We saw a lot of something we've seen throughout the season, teams putting their receiver in the slot against the Seahawks, so that we saw Fitzgerald there where he was matched up against Walter Thurman quite a bit. Also had some Browner. I don't really remember seeing him much against Sherman, although that's possibly because of the fact that when Sherman was on him, they didn't really look his direction.
It's true. And really, everybody did a great job on Larry Fitzgerald, honestly. They didn't need to have Richard Sherman following him around because Browner, in particular, played really well against Larry Fitzgerald. Thurman had a couple pass breakups. But NFL Network did a really good job of highlighting all the different ways that we were making sure that we kept an eye on Larry Fitzgerald throughout the game. They showed Clinton McDonald checking him for a second, Malcolm Smith watching him, as well as the secondary.
Yeah, and that's another way to do it besides matching up Sherman on him one-on-one is that kind of bracket coverage. But Browner, you mentioned, I think far and away his best game of the season.
And, you know, there was the play early in the game where you saw Browner matched up on Fitzgerald on the outside. It ended up being an interception for Earl Thomas. But I asked you, do you think that they would have thrown the deep ball to Larry Fitzgerald there if it was Sherman covering him? And I think that kind of set the tone for the rest of the game and how we are going to defend Larry Fitzgerald, and that it clearly is not, you know, the Larry Fitzgerald we've come to know over the last 10 seasons, too.
Well, he's not healthy right now, but Sherman had the one pass interference call. Did he give up a pass?
He gave up a couple passes at the end of the game. There were definitely some passes in front of him. He also gave up the catch to Patrick Peterson, where he was playing Patrick Peterson to... Oh, you said Sherman, not Browner.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I think that there were a couple passes.
In
front of Sherman.
Kevin Palmer was...
At the end of the game, they were playing back, and so there were some catches in front of everybody.
Yeah.
Some players who had really great games, though, in particular, KJ Wright and Malcolm Smith.
I think the game ball probably goes to Malcolm Smith. Yeah, I would even throw Bruce Irvin in there. I think all three linebackers who played today with Bobby Wagner missing his second straight game, I thought all of them were excellent.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. At no point did you think to yourself, we're really missing Bobby Wagner. And I kind of think that's been the case for the last 2 weeks also, where Wagner has been out and KJ Wright has moved to the middle and done an admirable job there. He's looked so natural in that. In a linebacker position.
Wright did have a couple of pass interference or holding calls against tight ends over the middle late in the game, but those guys really set the tone for the run defense, and Arizona could not get anything going on the ground today. 18 carries for 30 yards, a 1.7 average.
Yeah, so that kind of brings us to the next thing that I wanted to watch, which was whether the Cardinals would utilize Andre Ellington, somebody who in a small amount of carries has been really productive for the Cardinals. And today he ended up with 3 carries for 3 yards.
He still has a very small amount of carries.
I mean, he didn't get into the game more than he has in previous weeks. They didn't run Rashard Mendenhall a ton. He actually ran the ball more effectively than Andre Ellington. But Bruce Arians really shown an unwillingness to use Andre Ellington.
You're splitting hairs when it's 1.7 yards per carry versus 1 yard per carry. Ellington did have the one catch for a first down early in the game. That was his biggest factor.
When he got that catch, it scared me for the rest of the game. I was like, holy crap, Andre Ellington's going to be a huge part of this offense, and this is going to be the week that he really breaks out. And clearly that wasn't the case. But the D-line did a great job of stuffing the run. Bruce Irvin in particular, and you mentioned him at the linebacker position, really did a good job of stuffing the run. There was a play where he moved right into the gap where the running back was going to and made a great stop. It was a phenomenal play there by Bruce Irvin.
It's the kind of instinctual play that you don't expect from a guy who's been playing linebacker for a few months now. So he's really on the schedule.
He did a lot of pass rushing also. I don't remember him in coverage all that much. But Bruce Irvin looked really natural at that linebacker position, having played linebacker for a short period of time and been suspended for the first four games of the year, so not necessarily up to game speed. He looked perfect today.
We should also mention Cam Chancellor when we're talking about shutting down the run. He had probably his best game of the season as well, really was making plays coming up from his strong safety position.
Absolutely. He didn't have a ton of plays that got him onto the screen. He had the big run stop that he was really fired up about, and then a pass breakup in the end zone. But I think Cam Chancellor, just a really steady game the whole time. He didn't do anything wrong the whole game, basically.
Yeah, I think it was pretty much what you were looking for out of him. And, you know, the defense gave up a few points. There was one drive before halftime, but it was really a complete performance from them when you take out the garbage time.
Yeah, the garbage time is the place where the stats got a little bit more even. The Seahawks gave up some significant chunks of yardage there in the last two possessions. And it's kind of a shame that that was the case because they were playing so well up until then. I looked at it at one point and they'd given up 16 points. And I was like, this is a real shame that this defense has given up this many points. A lot of it is because of turnovers that the offense made.
Yeah, they had to kind of clean up for that. But then you also talk about 7 sacks today, getting great pressure on Carson Palmer.
And the pressure was the best all season. They were right in Carson Palmer's face on a lot of plays, coming under blockers, coming through the middle of the line. Some really great plays that they had there. Michael Bennett in particular, I thought was really good. Chris Clemens with a huge sack where he just bull rushed the left tackle there.
Mm-hmm.
That was Seinlin.
He's the center. So.
Yeah. But bull rushed the left tackle and then made the sack through a defender.
Yeah, I think we saw a couple of things. First, some good play design from Dan Quinn. There was one play where KJ Wright blitzed from the middle linebacker spot and basically came untouched because of the fact that Arizona didn't even suspect that that was a possibility. And the other thing that stands out to me is the depth of the pass rush really stood out today. I think you got pressure from Clemens, Averill, Bennett, just all sorts of different guys.
And huge game.
McDonald.
Huge game from Clint McDonald and Tony McDaniel, too. That entire D-line played really well, and there's still more behind them.
I think we've pretty much mentioned everyone on the defense had
a good
game. Every
single player on the defense had a good game.
We didn't, Earl Thomas is the one guy we haven't mentioned who only had a diving interception that he managed to stay in bounds.
And really, Sherman, I mean, they just didn't throw the ball towards Sherman, so it wasn't, he wasn't necessarily that much of a factor.
He was close to a couple of picks.
He almost had that pick. I was really wanting him to get one on Carson Palmer. I thought that this would be a day for him to add to his pick total, but Michael Floyd made a pretty good play breaking up the pass.
I guess the one downside for the defense was Brandon Browner failing to score on his interception and just tripping and at the 1 yard line. Although that worked out well for me as a Marshawn Lynch owner.
Yeah, fantasy wise, that was great for people who are playing the Seahawks defense in fantasy. Not quite so great. I say that as if I am.
Which you weren't.
So I was saying to you earlier this week when we were previewing this game that the difference in this game, and the Seahawks kind of dominated it in almost every capacity. But that the difference in this game might be if these interceptions turn into big plays. And that interception by Browner in particular kind of helped blow the game open. It was still feeling fairly close at that point. What was the score? 24-13?
Yeah.
It was 24-13, and then Browner gets this interception and sets up the 1 yard or the 2 yard touchdown for Marshawn Lynch. And that basically ended the game. When it got to 31-13, the momentum was 100% on the Seahawks side. And then it was basically over.
I hope Bill Barnwell doesn't listen and hear you refer to momentum.
You know what? And really, actually, I mean, the Cardinals hung around for longer than I probably would have expected them to after that. They responded to that by, they came back and had a field goal. So they didn't completely collapse after that, but that interception really changed the game.
I think it was mostly a matter of forcing them to become, I mean, they were never a two-dimensional team because they couldn't run the ball, but at some point they stopped running the ball entirely.
They really did stop running the ball, I thought kind of rather quickly too. Even when it was 14-0, they turned away from the run awfully quickly.
Well, let's talk about the offense a little bit. What were you looking for watching the Seahawks offense?
So watching the Seahawks offense, I was thinking about Zach Miller coming back from injury and how he would be a factor both in the run game and in the pass game. And receiving, he did great. He caught a touchdown, had 5 catches for 40 yards, and was definitely a factor. I think a little bit more in the first half than the second half.
Yeah.
But Zach Miller definitely helped set the tone in the game.
We talked a little bit in the preview podcast about how they've struggled defending tight ends, and it wasn't a huge game but he had 5 catches for 40 yards from Miller, and then also a 23-yard catch from Luke Wilson on a little play action early in the game. So combined 63 yards from those two guys on 9 targets, that's, you're going to take that, I think.
Absolutely. I thought Russell Wilson played a great game, except for the couple times. It didn't seem like he was feeling the pressure quite as much as Russell Wilson normally does. I would say if there's one little bit to nitpick about Russell Wilson in this game, it's that there was pressure very obviously coming in a few situations, and he either was less elusive than he's been in the past, or just wasn't feeling those defenders coming toward him.
Yeah, it struck out because of the fact that it was very atypical of Russell Wilson, what we've come to expect from him in terms of just having a sixth sense for that pressure and being able to either step up. He did a good job throwing the ball away when there was nothing there and immediately was under pressure, but had trouble with the fumbles.
And so you have to give credit to the Cardinals' defense, though. I mean, with their offense doing very little, putting them in a lot of bad situations, the Cardinals' defense really stepped up, and they had a lot of plays where they're in the backfield immediately right there to either hit Marshawn Lynch on the handoff or be up in Russell's face and force incompletions.
Yeah, their pressure was disruptive in the second half, without question.
Russell's completion percentage, I think, is going to be significantly lower than it probably should be because he had to throw the ball away so many times with defenders right in his face. It's kind of a shock that he didn't get an intentional grounding at any point also.
Yeah, I think there's only one that he was really in danger of where he just threw it.
He threw it at the ground, yeah.
No, I was talking about one where he threw it way over, I think it was like Zach Miller was on the sideline, threw it way over his head, but he was in the area.
So it was a great job by Russell Wilson. He's also, the Cardinals are getting all this pressure, but they're not turning it into sacks on every play in the same way that Carson Palmer on the other side is just going down. And Carson Palmer was losing significant chunks of yardage.
Yeah, you're not putting your offense in such a big hole there, even if you're having to lose the down. I think one of the things that stood out to me was Sidney Rice had his best game of the season, caught the early touchdown on a broken play, and then ended up with 3 catches on his 4 targets for 50 yards.
And he was another player who in the first half, Sidney Rice was a bigger factor than the second half in the receiving game. He had 3 catches, right? And so he had the long touchdown and then the big third down conversion on the last series of the half.
Yeah.
So just one more catch outside of that. In the second half, I think that Golden Tate was a much bigger part of the offense, and they really tried to get the ball to him.
And he had another terrific game. I think you feel good about the receiving core based on that.
And Russell spread the ball around really, really well, too. I mean, Doug Baldwin only getting 1 target and 1 catch in the game is pretty surprising, considering that he's been one of the most successful receivers on the team so far.
Probably timely, though, for Rice to do that, with Percy Harvin expected to come back to practice next week and potentially make his season debut, I think.
I would say that there's a very low potential of that. His season debut against the Rams next week?
Yeah. I wouldn't rule it out.
I mean, I've heard a lot of pundits in Seattle say this, but the Seahawks have been really good this season about waiting the extra week when it comes to players coming back from injury. With Brandon Browner, I think that they're very conservative about getting it back. Zach Miller, by all accounts, probably could have come back last week against Tennessee, and they wanted to wait to make sure that he was 100% healthy. When you have a team that has so much depth, you don't need to rush players back into the lineup. And so it kind of gives them a little bit more time to work Percy Harvin, get him back into game shape, get him back into rhythm, because it's been a long time since Percy Harvin has played football.
That's true, but the nice thing about this stretch is after getting this Thursday night game out of the way, you have 10 days off between now and a week from Monday, and that might be an opportunity where you have a lot of time to implement him in the game plan.
It's true. I would say that there's less than 5% chance that Percy Harvin's playing. But that long break is nice because Russell Wilson took a lot of hits today. It was seeing him on the sideline looking comfortable. I was very happy about that every single time I saw it when he was reviewing the film after every series.
It's maybe the most hits he's taken in a game, I think.
And we've said that a lot this year, too. Russell Wilson has been taking, and we said that after the Carolina game, definitely. We definitely said that after the Houston game, too, where Russell Wilson has taken a lot of hits, and so getting this break is really nice for him, and it's something where the Seahawks have this really late bye week. I think the latest you could possibly have a bye week, so it's nice to give Russell basically the equivalent of a bye week with this break.
I would say the difference between this game and the Houston game in particular, to a lesser extent the Indianapolis game, is it wasn't really a failure of the offensive line, that the pressure that Russell Wilson was under. It was more about what Arizona was doing defensively.
Absolutely, and I would give a lot of credit to Arizona. I think that they're a really good team. The Seahawks, in this game, this was the game that the Seahawks needed right now. Especially, I mean, we talked about this before, with some unrest among the fan base. I don't think that that's going to continue in the next 11 days. I think that the fan base is going to be generally happy with this victory. I think we'll go back to being perceived as probably the second best team in the league after Denver. It was a really solid road win. Getting a road win against a division opponent is big, and also our third road win of the season.
As many as last season, and last year there was not a road win against an NFC West opponent. Lost all three of those, so that's a nice thing to have in hand.
And so I was saying to you that three road wins means we're at least going to be 11-5.
Knock on wood.
That's assuming the perfect season at home.
Yeah, I think that's a little generous to assume that. I mean, I would be surprised if the Seahawks lost more than one game at home. So if that plays out, then you're looking at a 10-win season at worst.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, last season, and we still had some concerns about making the playoffs, right now that is not one of the main concerns. Our main concern is still the number one seed.
The first goal is to make the playoffs.
First goal, qualify for the playoffs.
Playoffs, division, number one seed, in that order.
So, again, it is nice to get that break for everybody involved, to give the offensive line a break, with the potential maybe of Brenno Giacomini coming back.
Potentially, and I don't think that's a huge deal. I think Michael Bowie has more than held his own at that position. I feel like having Unger back was the bigger deal.
Unger coming back was a bigger deal, but there were a few plays where Michael Bowie was beat pretty badly today. There's the sack fumble that they had that Michael Bowie ended up recovering, where I'm guessing it was John Abraham, because it was always John Abraham.
It was always
John Abraham. John Abraham came around the edge. Michael Bowie barely touched him. Sack fumble on Russell. Michael Bowie ended up recovering the fumble, which I think is pretty good awareness for a late-round rookie offensive lineman. But there are a few times where they are coming through the line and going past Bowie.
I'm just saying, I would not guarantee you that Brenno Giacomini gets that Spartan job back.
I would say that this was probably Michael Bowie's worst game that he's played since becoming a starter. But it's been encouraging having him out there and getting a young player this many snaps.
I think one of the interesting things about going back to winning on the road is how many Seahawks fans were at this game.
Yeah, that was really, really impressive. I was listening to Steve Vrabel in the pregame, and he said that there was louder Seahawks chants than Cardinals chants at the beginning of the game.
You definitely heard the audible Seahawks chant in the final minute once the game was decided.
There were a few moments there where I felt pretty impressed with the Arizona crowd, though. When they got back into it and it was 14-10 and the Seahawks were driving at the end of the half, it was pretty damn loud there.
Yeah, when they were kind of stuck in their own end zone.
So I wouldn't say that it was a non-factor. The Arizona crowd was a factor for a short period of time. That Sidney Rice third down catch really quieted the crowd, though.
Yeah. But the other thing is, I think that you're going to have a lot of those same fans on Saturday night Saturday afternoon when the Huskies play Arizona State. That'll be good to have a lot of people making that trip.
Yeah, you're hoping so. It's pretty convenient for folks to go down to Arizona. Any other thoughts from this game?
Well, we should probably wrap up by talking about our fantasy teams. It was a big matchup for that because you have Russell Wilson as your quarterback. I have Marshawn Lynch as my running back.
And Steven Hauschka as your kicker.
Yeah, that was the big play today, but the crucial swing was when Lynch's touchdown was reversed by replay. And
they ended up throwing a touchdown pass to Kellen Davis.
Yeah, it's a 10-point swing right
so
there.
So when this happens, let me break down my thought process here. There's always the little fantasy part in my mind. It's for most Seahawks, but there's always the little fantasy man back there saying, I wish that Russell would run it in here. Or have you considered a bootleg? But I was still happy about the touchdown. I told you at the time that I didn't care. I said, I have a lot of horses coming. Something. I said, quote, LeSean McCoy is walking through that door.
That's a little sense of what you get playing against Tristan on a week-to-week basis.
But when they did overturn the call and Russell threw the touchdown to Kellen Davis, I was a little bit more excited.
I gotta admit, I was happy, like I said, that Browner got tackled at the one on the subsequent.
And when you got that Marshawn Lynch touchdown, I still high-fived you and celebrated normally as if I wasn't thinking about the fantasy game.
But I did get 13 from Hauschka. Thank goodness for those long field goals.
The real issue was Russell Wilson was sitting on a 20 for most of the last drive for the Cardinals, 30 rushing yards, and then took a knee to end the game, which put him down to 29 rushing yards, and he ended with a 19.
I mean, there are people who lose games that way.
Thank God that we didn't bet on whether Russell Wilson would score 20 or more in that one.
Yeah, well, if only Jay Cutler had kneeled last week.
But I'm excited about our bet coming forward, and you having to shotgun fully a beer or me solemnly drinking Coors Light by myself.
I mean, I think that was more entertaining.
I do, but I feel like I'm going to have to look sad while doing it for it to look entertaining.
We'll have to post a photo with the podcast. I'm going to have to looking sad.
Act like it's like really hurting my palate by drinking Coors Light.
You'll have bitter beer face.
I would have to have bitter beer face for the whole tailgate.
All right, well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this special post-game edition.
Awesome. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.